here remember me being here before? Quite a few of you. You know, I was thinking back, and you know, as we were kind of thinking of things to be thankful for, and we've been doing full-time mission work, mission-related work since 2012 now, and I was like, man, God, thank you for that, because it's not, you know, it's not like you, it's not a typical job where you know, you get hired, and then it's like, okay, here's your salary. It's a job in which you raise your own salary. So it's like churches and individuals that give towards our ministry is how we're able to do what we do. And so when I think back, I'm like, wow, that's a decent chunk of time that God has enabled us to do what we do. And so that's my kind of thankful little bit there is that, okay, I think the first year I came here was probably it would have been 2012 or 2013, the first time I was able to share with you. And I think it's been every year since then I've been able to come and share with you kind of what God is, maybe something that's on my heart or on my wife's heart. She's not here today. We've got little kids now again because we adopted two last year. Do you guys remember when we came last year with our two daughters that we adopted? We were like, yeah, by the time we get back home, it's just too late. So she's stayed at home, and I came by myself tonight. But, a lot has happened in the last year. I want to kind of give you guys some updates, and I want to give you something to start out with. As we were talking, it seems like there was a thread a little bit with David tonight. And obviously, we talk about David a lot, and for good reason. And I think it's interesting. I think sometimes I don't know if you guys feel this way, but sometimes in my faith, I'll feel like I'm not that good. You guys ever feel like that? Like, you know, you look at some people and, hey, there's great people on TV, right? Like great pastors. But also sometimes we look at that and it's like, since there's this expectation that they look like they have it all together, you know, it sometimes makes us feel like, man, how can I be like that guy or that lady? You know, it's like, it looks like their kids are always smiling. My kids aren't always smiling. You know, I'm not always smiling. I mean, there's times where I like yell at my kids in a way where I'm like, I hope nobody heard that, right? I mean, because that's real life. But I think what's really encouraging about David is he had some problems too, didn't he? His heart was after God, but he didn't necessarily do everything right. You want to talk about family problems? If you've read anything about David, you're like, oh, wow, I guess my family's actually pretty good, right? I mean, there's some bad stuff there. But one of my favorite books of the Bible is Isaiah. There's so much richness. A lot of people don't realize this, but when it comes to mission, since our focus in our ministry and our life is missions, a lot of people think of mainly the New Testament when it comes to missions. And so I always like to go to the Old Testament and help people realize that actually God's always been a missionary God. It's not like all of a sudden when Jesus came onto the scene, it's like now he cares about other people. It's like, no, actually in the Old Testament, he cared about all the nations. It wasn't just Israel. As a matter of fact, one thing that I find interesting is even in the book of Exodus, there's a phrase that says that Egypt will know that I am God, and that phrase occurs more times than that Israel may know that I am God. And we know that Egyptians followed the Israelites out of the promised land. And so when we think about this, it's like, okay, so God really did care about the nations. So this is an encouraging word to all of us, as well as our focus. I don't even remember who said it a little bit ago. I don't remember if it was you, Pastor Cody. Somebody made the statement that, like, God, there's no plan B. It's kind of, God only has one plan. It's not like, well, you know, if it doesn't work out with this plan that I've got, then I'll just modify things. His plan, his number one plan, is redeeming all of mankind. And I think that's awesome, because that is his plan for this world, is he wants people to worship him. And so in order to do that, he said, hey, you know what? Each one of you get to have a part in that. And it's not just Americans that get to go to heaven, right? It's not just Israelites or Israelis in today's context. No, he wants everyone to be redeemed, every tribe, tongue, and nation. So this, to me, is really encouraging. Isaiah 55, if you want to follow along. I'm reading from the ESV. Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And he who has no money, come, buy and eat. come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me, and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear, and come to me. Hear that your soul may live, and I will make with you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast, sure love for David. Behold, I made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and commander for the peoples. Behold, you shall call a nation that you do not know, and a nation that did not know you shall run to you, because the Lord your God and the Holy One of Israel, for he has glorified you. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord, that he may have compassion on him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven, and do not return there, but water the earth, making it bring forth and sprout, giving it seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goes out from my mouth. It shall not return to me empty, but it shall accomplish that which I purpose, and shall succeed in the thing for which I sent it. So what God is saying here, as we just kind of paraphrase this a little bit, is he's saying, it's like I've had many talks with my daughter. So my daughter is a junior at the University of Iowa, and we have these talks because she's very compassionate. And she sometimes sees like the faults of the way, you know, like for example, the greed that can exist in this world, and sometimes the rich get richer, right? And the poor kind of stay where they're at. And so we've had these talks and she's like, Dad, I don't know what to do with this, because she's like, I know that the idea of a socialist way of life, it doesn't work. You know, people have tried it many times, the way of like, you know, communism and those types of things. But she's like, what she's longing for is this, that one day everything will be redeemed and God will supply all of our needs. We won't have to worry about whether we have a job. We won't have to worry about, because God will give us what we need as we do his work. And we won't have to think, okay, I've got 7 kids. How do I take care of their needs? Right? You can start to think that it's like all up to you. You get disconnected from God. What else is being said in here is God is saying, I am there for all peoples, all nations of this earth. I want them to come back and worship me. That is his goal. That is your job. That is my job as we're Christians. Whether it's here in Little Cedar Rapids, whether it's on the other side of the world, no matter what we're doing, we're to be going out and helping people to know him. It's easy to lose sight of that, isn't it? I mean, I don't know about you guys. I don't really watch news on TV because I don't have, I have like TV, but not really TV. Do you guys know what I mean by that anymore? It's like, you know, when I was a kid, we'd turn on the TV, and what was on TV is what you watched, right? I mean, it was like Channel 7, where, you know, being in Iowa, it's like 2, 7, and 9, and then when I was a kid, I could never figure out that knob. You put it to U. What did U stand for? I mean, it was Iowa Public Television, but what was U? I mean, as a kid, I never understood it. I'm like, why is U a station, and everyone else has a number? Anyway. My point being is, like, so many of us now, we don't even have like regular news channels that we turn on and watch. Some of us do. I don't. But I check my phone. I like keep up with world events. And it's like we're always seeing so many bad things, aren't we? We're seeing flooding in North Carolina. We're seeing hurricanes all over. We're seeing all these bad things. And it's easy to get just inundated and feel like bogged down by all this stuff. Even in our own lives, I mean, if we all shared a little bit about what's going on in our lives, we all have something, right? I mean, this is like a theme that we talk about, like whether it's a health issue or whether someone has passed away, or maybe we have a relationship issue and we don't know what to do about it. Someone in our life is not treating us right. One thing I've seen in traveling all over the world is this theme is constant. All people. It's a people thing. It's not like an American thing. It's not a Christian thing. It's not a Muslim thing. It's a people thing. We all have stuff. And what God is saying is, you know what? There will be a day. What are you saying in Isaiah 55? There will be a day where we don't have to worry about this. But while we're here, if we fast forward to the New Testament a little bit, Jesus said, we're going to have trouble, right? It's not like, I remember when I first became a Christian, I kind of had this feeling just by observing things. It's like, okay, so I think if I accept Jesus, then like, you know, my wife's just going to get along with me automatically all the time, right? My kids will just be good kids, you know, especially if you bring them to Sunday school, right? And if you come to Sunday night church, then you know they'll really be good. You know, I kind of had that feeling. I mean, you know, obviously this is silly, but it's like I thought, okay, well, because I love Jesus, then everything else will work out. But it doesn't always work that way, does it? There's still a lot of stuff in life. But what God promises here in Isaiah is that there is another day coming. One of my favorite analogies, a friend of mine said it this way. He said, you know, the war has been won, right? The war has been won. Victory is assured, but we still have battles to fight. You know, for example, if you look back to something like World War II, basically before the Japanese surrendered, the fate was already sealed. Even before the bombs were dropped, they were going to lose the war. But there was still battles that were being fought. And in a similar way, we are in that position today. We're still going through these spiritual battles. We know the victory is assured. And we have the choice whether we want to enter into those battles. Right? We can sit by on the sideline because, hey, the war's already been won. And that's tempting to do, right? Because we can just say, you know what? I'm saved. I love Jesus. Right? And I'm just going to coast it out. Because life's tough. I'm just going to kind of take care of me and my own. Maybe sometimes we do that with our families, right? Or those close to us. And we say, you know what? I'm just going to kind of coast it out. And I'm going to wait for either Jesus to return or else I will die and go to paradise with him. But what is God saying? He's saying, I want you to be in the game. I want you to be a part of these battles. Before the end comes, we have a lot to do. One of the things that, you know, that we have these really bad things about always being connected to media. And I mean, how many times, if you've got a cell phone, I guarantee you've already had some sort of a notification since you've been here, right? I mean, you can be like, oh, is that important or not? So we're always bothered by this. One of the good things about it is, though, we're able to see what's going on. We're more connected. So that can be a positive thing. When you think about, we know the needs on the other side of the world within 10 minutes of them happening. You have some sort of an issue that happens on the other side of the world, and we know about it. We can kind of run away from those, or we can join in and say, hey, you know what, we're going to pray. Or we're going to actually run to that battle. We're going to say, you know what, there's people over there that need Jesus. How can we be a part of it? If it's not through prayer, maybe it's through going there. Maybe it's through finding someone who is going there and praying. So this is what we're going to talk about a little bit tonight, is I want to look forward to this day. I want to know that God has everything worked out. But right now, I'm here. And I have had choice today and tomorrow and the next day whether I'm going to join in and be a part of that battle. And that's our family. Our family, we're no different than any of you guys' families. We're just a family of regular people. And we're trying our best to serve Jesus. Do you have any of those? Were you able to get those photos up there? If you want to put a first photo up there, which would be a photo of a bunch of, yep, those guys. These are some of my friends. So those of you that don't know about what we do as a family, we work in the Caribbean. We work with all the nations in the Caribbean at different points, and we're helping them to train and send Caribbean missionaries to the other side of the earth. Our focus is, maybe you remember Paul saying like that his goal was not to work where someone else is already working. You know, I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, not to like where someone else has already got a foundation and is kind of building a church. He's not going to work there. He wants to go somewhere where there's no Christians. And that's our goal with what we do. We're working with Caribbean people who have that same heart, and they're saying, we want to train and send missionaries. We want to mobilize a mission force out of the Caribbean to help reach the unreached. For the last 100 years or so, it's mostly been an American and European mission movement. But we're seeing that change. because the number percentage-wise of Christians in the United States is very small compared to the global Christian church. We still send more missionaries than most countries in the world, but it's changing. So we're helping to hand off that baton to this next new wave of missionaries that are saying, hey, you know what? We're ready to join the battle. We're ready to get our hands dirty. So these are some of my friends. If you look at the guy closest to us with the dreadlocks that are pulled back, his name is Joash. And the guy in the middle, his name is Clifton, and I'm really good friends with Clifton. These people are from Trinidad and Tobago. And then on the other side of Clifton is Clifton's wife, Betty. And they're all wearing Storyline shirts. And Storyline is the organization that we work with, and we are partners with Clifton and his team there. They have a mission organization that's based in Trinidad and Tobago that's called Pioneers World Missions. And they were started like in 1992. They are not affiliated with any denomination. They work with many different denominations throughout Trinidad and Tobago and in other Caribbean countries as well. And their vision is like ours. They're saying, hey, you know what? We want to find where there's the least Christians, and that's where we're going. We're not going to say, oh, it's kind of comfortable here, because it's like Trinidad, for example, is about 40, 45% evangelical Christian. And he's saying, hey, you know what? There's enough churches here. They can plant their own churches. You know what I'm saying by that? Like there's a difference between missions and evangelism. Let's kind of clarify that. I like to talk about this a lot, because missions is when you go somewhere and you a lot of times have to learn another culture, another language, and you're actually going somewhere where there's no churches, okay? You're going there to start churches. Evangelism is what we would do here in Cedar Rapids. We go out and we hope to plant more churches, right? Like as Christians, we want to see more and more churches, more and more Christians. We're sharing our faith. That's evangelism. So that's the big difference. So my friend Clifton's saying, you know, evangelism is great. We all need to be a part of evangelism. But he's saying, you know what? We are going to be a mission force on the other side of the world. So just this year, this is a picture of them. If you see all these little kids there, and that's their Indian interpreter. They're in northern India. They went to two different ethnic groups in India where there was no known Christians. And what they did is they shared the gospel. I mean, these are dangerous areas. These two happen to be very Hindu areas, and there's a lot of times I don't think of Hindus as being scary. I don't know about you, but like because of the media, because of a lot of reasons, I think of, you know, it's like, oh, you think of Muslim terrorists, right? But actually, in a lot of these Hindu areas, Hindus are militant because they believe that to be Indian is to be Hindu. You should not be anything but Hindu if you're Indian, because that's like where it came from. It would maybe be like for us a little bit, like if we'll say we were all here and somebody came in and started evangelizing to us that was Indian and was Hindu, and they were trying to get us to become Hindus. It'd be like, no, my family's Christian. Stop it, you know, get away from me. But for them, it's even more intense. I mean, they will kill people. They'll imprison them. And so my friend Clifton, he's Indian background, if you can kind of look and see. So this is what's so cool about the Caribbean, is it's such a mixed area. So Clifton and Betty are both Indian background. Betty's parents were Hindu. Clifton's parents were Muslim. He was Muslim until he was 8 years old. And then Joash's parents were Christian, but he's obviously black African, and the other two are Indian background. So they go into these places, and people are automatically like, who are these people and why are they here? Came from this tiny island all the way across the world to share the gospel with them. And they get amazing results. So this is just one example of the partnerships that we have. We work closely with Clifton. As a matter of fact, in a couple weeks, I'm going to be in Haiti, and we're working with a couple of different organizations in Haiti that are mobilizing Haitians to be missionaries. They're in. That's a place where a lot of people think, oh, well, I go to Haiti to serve, right? Well, Haiti is about 40 to 45% evangelical Christian as well. And many of these Haitian leaders are saying, hey, you know what? I get that we don't have a lot of money, but I don't remember in the Bible where it says, go, make disciples of all nations, and baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, after you have this much money, right? That's not in the Bible, right? It doesn't say anything about, hey, when you get to a certain monetary place, then you can do missions. Then you can share your faith. No, that's not in the Bible. And so the Haitian church is saying, hey, you know what? For quite a while, we've received a lot of missionaries. As a matter of fact, per capita, Haiti's has received more missionaries than any other country in the world. So what they're saying is it's time for us to start putting the wheels in motion to give. And we might not have a lot of money, but we have Jesus. We can plant churches in North Africa, right? I mean, it might be a little bit of a journey to help them to get there as far as training and start helping them to understand proper missiology and all that. But that's what we're there to do. We're there to help them. And so actually, so Clifton and their team, there's going to be 6 Trinidadians that will be meeting with me in Haiti. And one of the things we're exploring, 2 different things. They're going to work more with the Haitian church, helping them to mobilize, but they're also going to explore using Haiti as a training ground for Trinidadian missionaries who will go long-term to places like Indonesia and India. So, for example, it's sometimes, like if you imagine picking up here in Cedar Rapids, if you've never traveled anywhere, imagine saying, hey, you know what, you're going to move to the Caucasus Mountains of Russia, and you're going to live among a Muslim ethnic group where there's no Christians, and you're going to plant churches. That would be kind of a daunting thing, wouldn't it? But maybe to have like a stepping stone and say, hey, actually, before you go there, we're going to send you to Mexico. And you're going to live for 3 months. And you're going to do some like evangelism. You're going to work with some of the local churches. And then you will go to Russia. That would be helpful, don't you think? That's one of the things that the Trinidadians are exploring as far as sending. Rather than just sending people to Indonesia right away, say, hey, let's use Haiti as a stepping stone. You're outside of your own culture, but it's not that far away. People speak a different language, but they also have some similar cultural things because they're in the Caribbean. But it's still a process getting there. Their goal is to get to the unreached. They have a very clear vision. So I'm really excited about that. That's just one example of what God's doing in Trinidad and Tobago. Just this last year, I mean, you guys know about the girls that we were adopting. Their adoption was final in December. And it's crazy. I thought I had photos on my phone that I was going to share. And like, it's like, I travel quite a bit. So I take photos and I like had moved them onto my computer so I don't have them. Super recent photos of them, but yeah, the girls are doing for the most part really good. It's a challenge whenever you go through stuff. You know, both of our girls that were adopted, they were removed from the home, and so that's why we adopted them. They're from here in Iowa originally, but it's even though they're little, there's still, you know, just stuff that they have to work through. But they're doing really good health wise, doing amazing. Our oldest that we adopted was 5, and she was on an inhaler twice a day when we got her, and now she doesn't take an inhaler at all. So praise God for that. Health-wise, they're both doing amazing. Intellectually, doing amazing. And so that's awesome. Our oldest daughter is at the University of Iowa, like I mentioned. Then our next son, he's going to be graduating high school this year, and he'll actually be graduating with an associate's degree when he graduates high school. So that's kind of cool. He's worked at college stuff while he was in high school. And then the other 3 are in school, just kind of plugging away, you know, doing kids stuff. So we try to bring them with. Here's an interesting thing. So if you want to move on to the next slide. So fast forwarding kind of through the year, we had adoption in December. I was in Trinidad and Tobago. I showed you those guys, that some of the stuff we're doing with there in January. And then Melanie was also in January. She was, I'll show a couple of pictures after this one, but I don't know if you guys remember, almost exactly a year ago, there was really bad hurricanes that hit the Caribbean. Do you guys remember that? 2 really bad hurricanes, Irma and Maria, some of the worst that the Caribbean has ever seen. And so we had a church in Cedar Falls that gave us $20,000, not for us, but for our partners in the Caribbean to help them rebuild. And so we divided that up among a couple of different nations and helped. And it was really exciting because it was a lot of times what we're going in and doing is saying, hey guys, send missionaries. How do we help you? You know, let's train, let's go. And this time we're saying, hey, we're just here to help you. Just like in the book of Acts, like we know that you went through something and we're here to give you some money to help. You know, like for example, our friend, oh, you'll see some pictures that we'll talk about more, but this is in April. Melanie and I went to the island of Guadeloupe. Have any of you guys ever heard of Guadeloupe? Guadeloupe is one of the French islands in the Caribbean, and it's still a part of France. And this is actually a Dominican church. So Dominica is an island that was severely damaged by the hurricanes last year. And Melanie and one of our other friends went there, and they helped put roofs back on 7 houses. Like, some of that money that we got from the church, we were able to work through another Trinidadian organization that was there, help put roofs back on people's houses that were not able to, they were, you know, uninhabitable because the roofs were gone, and lots of damaged ceilings and water damage. I mean, you can imagine when you don't have a roof on for a couple of months what happens to your house. So that was really exciting. And because of those connections, we had this connection with the Dominican church. So we don't speak French. I know a little bit of French. I studied it in high school. But being there in Guadeloupe, these Dominicans, they speak, their first language is English, but they all also speak French. So we were able to be there. We had like a mission seminar, spent a whole afternoon on a Sunday teaching about missions. And it was super cool because there was about, I'd probably say about 50 to 60 people there, and most of them had never, ever considered that they could do mission work. You know, like, in their mind, most of them were thinking, missions is for old white men. You know, I mean, that's just what, that's kind of the supposition that's there, because that's what they've seen modeled. And so kind of it was like light bulbs coming on, and they were dreaming, and it was just really cool. To see that happen. So that's my wife, Melanie, teaching there in Guadeloupe, and we had a great time. We also, 20 years, my wife and I have been married 20 years this year, so we took like 4 days after this, and we rented a car, and we just relaxed, drove all around the island, went to beaches, and so that was really fun too. If you ever have the chance to go to the Caribbean, I think that one of the areas that's often overlooked is the French Caribbean, because it's really cool. Just kind of letting you know, because it's, imagine the Caribbean, but with France. So like, you, like everywhere you go, there's like, you know, like the baguettes, you know, that you think of when you think of France. Like, I mean, you have espresso everywhere and baguettes, and yet you're in the Caribbean. It was, I don't know, good food, really friendly people. So yeah, we loved Guadeloupe. If you want to move on to the next slide. So this is right before we went to Guadeloupe, we were in, Melanie and I went to Barbuda. Now, if you followed any of the hurricane stuff last year, Barbuda got a lot of attention because it was probably the most destroyed of all the islands. The entire island was absolutely destroyed. This is one of my good friends. He's a bishop of the Pentecostal church in Barbuda, and this is their education center. They would have like after school programs and stuff in this building, and you know, kids could come. They had a computer lab and everything, and this is one of the better buildings in Barbuda. But you can see, if I don't know how well you can see it, but there's supposed to be a roof on that. There's no roof at all, and so you can see all the way through it. I mean, they have some tarps down there kind of holding some, covering some things, and it was just so difficult. So we stayed in Barbuda for 4 days, no power, there was no restaurants, there was like one little teeny store that had just started to open back up. We met with a few people. There was some people with Samaritan's Purse there. They actually, so we had a seminar, a mission seminar at my friend Nigel's church. So it was so cool to see these people in the midst of what they were going through. They were still focused on how they could be a blessing to the nations. They've supported missionaries in Cambodia. They've supported missionaries in East Africa. And they're saying, hey, you know what? We're not going to become inward focused just because we're facing destruction. So we did 2 evenings. We did seminars, and it was really cool because there was a group, I think there was probably about 25 people with Samaritan's Purse from all over the U.S., some from Canada, that came to our seminar too. So it was just really neat. They do something very different from what we do, you know, kind of disaster relief stuff, and we were just able to talk to them and make connections with them. And so it was just cool to see God's body just doing, you know, we all have like our specialties and our niches. So anyway, they're making huge progress, but it's still just a long road to recovery in those islands that were hit in the Caribbean. If you want to move on to the next slide. So this is June. This summer was crazy for our family. We spent the entire month of June as a family of 9 in Cuba. So imagine that. Have any of you guys ever been to Cuba? Anybody ever been to Cuba? So Cuba's awesome. Like, I absolutely love Cuba. But let's just say it's not easy. It's easy if you visit Cuba, you know, and you stay in like a hotel or something, and you're there for like a couple weeks, you know, and you kind of have like a tourist budget. But if you're living there and trying to live with the locals, it's a little bit different deal. Because it's like, there's not a lot of stuff. You don't get to go like, I'll give you this example. So we stayed at this, like at the very end of our trip, we stayed at this place in Havana. It was kind of like, the best way to describe it would be like an Airbnb. We stayed in someone's house with them, and we had like our own rooms. And then we wanted to buy water, okay? Just water, because you can't drink the water there. So we wanted to buy water bottles. You know what water bottles look like, right? Here. They're about this size, okay? So I went to the market. There's like it'd be like Cuba's version of Walmart, which is not anything like Walmart. It's like the size of a Quickstar, okay? But not nearly as much stuff as a Quickstar. So you go in there, and every day there's something different in there, and you don't know what will be there. So shopping in Cuba is very difficult. So I went in there. One day I went in there, and there was a whole bunch of water, a whole bunch of these little waters this size. Okay, so I go in there, and I'm like, oh, okay. I bought a couple cases, and, you know. Okay, so like fast forward like 3 days, because it's hot. You know, it's June in Cuba, so it's hot, humid. And so I go back to get some more, and they're like, there isn't any. I'm like, okay. They're like, tomorrow. So I come to, they said, tomorrow in the morning. So I was like, okay. I came back in the morning. There's no water. I'm like, okay. They're like, after lunch. So I was like, okay. So I came after lunch. There was water. There was so much water. There was like, as long as this pew, two of these pews probably, and about from you guys to me, cases of water. And I'm like, hey, can I get some water? And they're like, no. We have to put it on the shelves, and then you can get it. Try coming back in the morning. I'm like, okay, all right. So I come back in the morning, right? It's all gone. And nobody could give me a straight answer what happened to it. And so finally I start looking around. I mean, there's other stores, you know, within a couple miles. So I walked to a different store. Oh yeah, they had all kinds of water at that store. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, I had no idea how to find this stuff. And like, nobody gives you answers. You know, you ask somebody and they're like, I don't know, you know? And like, because like, honestly, they usually don't know. It's just a guessing game. There's people that I've read about that have lived there. And they say that like, literally, like, not because it's some sort of like, hey, I'm a man and you're a woman and this is your job, but we'll say it'll be a guy that works at the embassy. You know, like I'm making it up. We'll say I'm a Canadian that works at the embassy. Literally, my wife, like her whole time, full-time job would usually be finding food, because it's that hard. Like they said, I was reading one thing, and they were looking for sour cream, and they waited for like a month and a half to get sour cream, and all they found was like a huge tub of it, and so they bought it all. So, anyway, that's just like being in Cuba. Like, it was so hot, and it was so humid, and we've developed a partnership with a denomination in Cuba, and we've also developed a partnership with one of the biggest Latin America mission organizations. And so I'm most likely going to be back in Cuba in December in three different locations. We're helping to mobilize Cuban missionaries. Cubans are exceptionally adaptable because of these circumstances. They're very intelligent. Almost everyone in Cuba has a college education. So they're very intelligent, very adaptable. Their big problem is they don't have money. But I think God can take care of that. I think sometimes we ask that question first and forget about the other stuff. So a lot of my friends in Cuba are feeling called to minister in the Muslim world. One guy that I met with, he has a vision to go to Spain and work with the Syrian refugees that are coming through Spain. That's his goal, is to plant churches among the Syrian refugees. Another guy, he said, I mean, there's people that are serving all over the world from Cuba. It's kind of it's actually very amazing, like what God is doing in Cuba. One of the fastest growth rates among the Christian church in the world is in Cuba today. So this is one of my friend Hernan, his church. This was just an evening service, and they, you know, I'll tell you what, I mean, I like Jesus, but I don't always like going to church every day. So like, the church is in his house, okay? So This is the sanctuary, because that's how everything is in Cuba. Very few buildings are standalone churches. So this is the sanctuary. On the other side of that wall is the courtyard, and over to the, what would be, as we're looking at this, over to the right is like where my friend Hernan and his family lives. I'm sure you'd love that, right? Do you want to just, maybe you guys could live in this room right over here, right? And people can just come and talk to you at all hours of the day because that's what they do. And I'm like, wow, you know, most American pastors that I know, I don't think would love that. Like, yeah, let's just live at the church so we can be available to people all day, every day, you know? So this was about, I would probably say 10:45 at night. We got done on a Thursday night. And I'm like, you guys are crazy, you know? It's like every night there's something going on at the church. But it's super cool because their model, get this, their model is genius. This is the mother church right here. I mean, not everyone there. I mean, this was just a night service, so not everyone was there. But what they do is they use this. This is like the mothership, okay? So imagine this is kind of the mother church. But out of this, then we would have like 10 other churches throughout the city. And people will come back here on Sundays and worship together, but all throughout the week, they're meeting in different locations throughout the city. That's how they do it at that church. And I mean, they have like maps on the wall, like, okay, we need to go to this part of the city, we need to go to here. I mean, it's super awesome. And they work with each other. They don't care what denomination or what organization they are. If they love Jesus, we want to work with them. And I'm like, man, we need to learn something from the Cubans, I think, because it was awesome to see it in action. And these people were so committed. And I joked with, so the guy, if you look over to my right, I'm in the blue shirt there, the guy with his hand over his face, his name is Juan. And every picture I ever have of Juan, this is my third time to Cuba being with him, he always is doing something in a picture so you can't see his face. And so I'm like, what's up with Juan? Is he trying to hide or something? It's really funny. But he's the nicest guy. If you want to move on to the next picture, just a little bit more about Cuba. One of the things that really stretched our faith while we were in Cuba is we were staying with my friend Hernan, Pastor Hernan, and it was so stinking hot. Like they kind of made this little room for us. They like put beds in it and everything. And I swear at night, it did not get below 90 degrees. It was so hot in that room. And we were just like all night long. I mean, you don't even think about putting a sheet on you, you know, and you've got bugs biting you. And, you know, there's like every once in a while you get a fire ant would bite you in the side or something. You'd be sleeping. You're like, ah, you know, and it just like burns for like a half hour. Okay. So we don't know whether it was virus or bacteria, what it was. But our 5-year-old Zola got sick. She got really sick. She just kept throwing up. So it was over a day where she couldn't keep any fluids down. And when you're dealing with that kind of heat, like we were just like, I don't know what to do because we couldn't get her cooled down. We couldn't get her to hold anything down. It's not like you can go buy Pedialyte or something, you know. And so we decided to bring her to the local clinic. This is as we were leaving the local clinic. And it's kind of an interesting thing because there's like, part of it is first of all, Cuba does have exceptional medicine, but also, they, you know, you're a foreigner, and two things, they can make money off of foreigners, and they don't want to look bad. They want to make sure that they take care of a foreigner. So we're like, you know, it's so hard to navigate. Like, what choice do we make? But we're like, it's better to do too much than not enough, right? And so they said that they could not give her an IV at the clinic, so they needed to bring her to the hospital. Well, the bad thing was the hospital was over an hour away. The children's hospital, and that they don't deal, everything's specialty in Cuba, so they only do children's stuff at the children's hospital. So we had to go to, this city that we were in here is called Trinidad, which it means the Trinity, and then we went to the other city is where the province that we were in is called Sancti Spiritu, which in Latin means Holy Spirit. So we were in Holy Spirit province and in the city of the Trinity, and then we went to the city of Sancti Spiritu, and it was crazy because I had to take care of the other kids. So this is me. I took this picture as Melanie, and you can't really see Zola because it's dark there, and Zola has dark skin, but they were getting ready to head up there. I was sending them on an ambulance an hour away, and I had no way to call them or anything because I had my phone, I had a Cuba SIM card in, but Melanie didn't have one, and I was on the phone. I was trying to like talk to like some of my friends, making sure that we were going to be taken care of at the hospital because they had a... It's so cool how God works. So they get there, and we found out that there was a young guy who my friend Hernan had mentored, and he was in the youth group, really great kid, part of one of the church plants. He was like maybe 22. He was in training to be a doctor at the hospital where Zola was going to. So his name was Angel. Angel went and made sure that they were taken care of. He made sure that they weren't charging them for too much stuff. He made sure that everything was going okay. And he spoke great English, which helped because my wife and I's Spanish is so-so. And that was a huge blessing. And Zola came out good. I think we were definitely wise to get fluids through her and stuff because dehydration can be bad. But we didn't really know what to do. But this really stretched our faith because during this time, my kids are back at the house. It's not like, here, hey, I can just call my kids on the phone, right? And like, they don't know what's happening, mom and dad are gone. And it was just a crazy situation. And it took like 3 days to work itself out. And there was times where I'm like, God, what was I thinking bringing my whole family to Cuba? Like what? But I can tell you through that, we built relationships that were super deep. You can't replace those experiences when people are caring for you and you have to just like, trust them, trust other believers that they're going to take care of you. And that's what's super cool about being a Christian is that like we have people all over the world that we're like, you guys would do the same thing, right? One of our friends from Cuba was here and they were saying like, I don't know how to go to the hospital. How does it work? Like, we had no idea. And so they had to walk us through every little thing because it's like, we don't know, do I pay right here? Do I like, I don't know what I do. And so they helped us with all of that stuff. And so we went there to be a blessing to them and to help them. We were doing teachings and trainings and then they ended up taking care of us, which was really humbling because I don't like to be in that position. I want to be the one helping them. It was all of our kids at the end of our trip, we said to them, we talked and we said, so would you guys do this again? Because it was not easy. It was not like, hey, we're going to Disneyland for our summer trip, And they were like, yeah, it was like the hardest thing we've ever done, but we'd do it again. To give you an example, I lost 9 pounds while I was in Cuba. My wife lost 10. My oldest daughter, who only weighs like 140 pounds to start with, lost 13 pounds. So it gives you an idea, between the heat and the lack of food and everything, not complaining at all. It's just like that's the lifestyle that most people live throughout the world. So it was really an eye-opener for us to live that life for just a month. If you want to move on to the next slide. Oh, wow. So these guys are crazy. They're upside down. No, I'm just kidding. But so if you guys want to stand on your head... No, you can get an idea, but I'm the guy over there, the whiter looking one, and these two guys are not with the Cuban special services or anything like that. They're actually both missionaries, and they work with the largest Latin American mission organization called COMIBOM, and which is actually illegal in Cuba, so they have their own name in Cuba because the Cuban government doesn't like what they do. But it was really cool because we met and we were like had the exact same heart and exact same beliefs for what God can use the Cuban church for. And so we're moving forward full speed ahead with COMIBOM. If you want to move on to the next slide. I think there's maybe one more. Or is that it? That might be it. Okay. So that's kind of our summer in a nutshell. I want to open up a little bit. We have a lot of things going on this fall, and I'll share just a little bit with you guys about those and what God is doing. And then I want you guys to be able to ask questions and talk. And I can walk all over, do whatever. But I don't want to just be telling you guys a bunch of stuff. So this fall, in a few weeks, I'll be in Haiti working with two organizations in Haiti. One of them will be 400 Haitian pastors who will be learning about missions and God's heart for the nations for the first time. And we're starting to work very closely with this organization that will be training and sending Haitian missionaries. And then I told you a little bit about the Trinidadians and what they'll be doing there. And then in November, end of October, beginning of November, I'm going to be... So the organization we work with, the two areas we're very active in three primary areas right now, Latin America, the Caribbean, and then one of my other coworkers works in the Slavic world. So he's working primarily in Russia and Ukraine. helping the... So I'll be in Russia with my friend Kirby in October, November. And we're working with the Russian Baptists. And the Russian Baptist Union is doing a lot of mission mobilization, because there's a lot of remote areas in Russia that have yet to be reached, a lot of areas where people have never heard the name of Jesus, mostly Muslim areas. So the Russian Baptists are very, very strong in mission sending, and they're working to reach these areas, as well as going to places where Russia has unique connections, places like Syria, places like Iran. So I'm really excited I'm just going to be serving on that trip, helping to teach a seminar on missions. And then we're also, it's so funny because sometimes as Americans we think, you know, everything, like we start everything or we do everything, but there is it's called the Russian Bible Translation Society, and they have been translating Bibles into languages that don't have the Bible. And so they're working on one language right now that's an ethnic group that does not have a Bible in their language. There's no Christians among them. And so we're going to stop in and just kind of talk to them, because we've already got a partnership with them, see how things are going, see how we can be praying for them. So I'm just really excited to see what God is doing in Russia. You know, our political situation with Russia has been interesting for what, the last 70 years, 75 years? So it's like been a mysterious place to most of us, but God is moving in Russia. And the Russians are sending missionaries, and I'm just really humbled that we get to be a part of that. And then next year we've got already a bunch of things. We'll be in Puerto Rico at the beginning of the year, working with the Puerto Rican multiple denominations in Puerto Rico that are already sending mostly to the Muslim world. So we're continuing to help with those efforts. There's a huge connection. Many people don't realize that, but with the Latin American world and the Muslim world. Because, first of all, Spain was once conquered by the Muslims. So the Spanish language, 10% of Spanish words are comprised of Arabic words. So you already have that unique connection. And then culturally, because the Muslims took over Spain, there's a lot of cultural similarities. For example, the hospitality that a lot of times Latin Americans are known for, it's the same in the Arab world. And so, and then when you look at the skin color of a lot of Latin Americans, very similar to the Arab world. So as they go, a lot of times they encounter less barriers than what we would well, most of us, we're not all white, right? But especially us white people that are Americans, as we go to places that are mostly Muslim, a lot of times there's a lot of barriers that are immediately up just because we're Americans, you know, that are coming in with the gospel. So that's, for me, very exciting on a personal level to see the Puerto Ricans taking more of a role in that part of the world. So that's kind of the near future. It's all like kind of logistical, almost feels like a business meeting, but I want you guys to know what you've invested in over the last year. And I just want to open things up right now for questions, whether it's about our family, whether it's about our travels, whether it's about exactly what we do, feel free to ask questions. So here we are. We're open for questions. Yes. Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, we take people with, but the nature of what we do is a little different. So I used to do, like when I was a youth pastor, we would take like mission trips, and really all we were doing is helping people out, you know, doing projects and serving people. But like the nature of what we do, it's not that we want to disclude anyone. For example, I'm still hopeful that my pastor at the church I'm going to now is going to be coming with me to Haiti, but it's a little more selective, because it's like, for example, to have a big group, it doesn't really work, if that makes sense, because we're doing mostly what we do in our mobilization work is, I'll make up a scenario. So you're from Cuba, so your name is Jose. So Jose here is saying, he's contacted me and he says, hey Josh, we have this vision and we want to send more missionaries out of Cuba, and I've got connections and I want to be able to kind of like do this and all this stuff. How can you help serve me? So what we do is usually come in and we like work with you, work with your networks. We might do one seminar, but then our goal is to hand over everything to you. So most everything, like for example, our Trinidadian friends, they're leading everything at this point. Like we're not actually doing much in Trinidad except for continuing to serve them with their next needs. So now they're getting more and more people. They've done a lot of seminars, a lot of teachings about missions. They're getting a lot of young people that want to go. And they're saying, now what? How do we train these people? So that's like where we've been dreaming about this Haiti, using this base in Haiti as a mission training ground. But this is all led by them. Like, I'll bring them along and introduce them to people I know. But it makes it a little more difficult to just say, hey, let's bring a mission team, because it doesn't really accomplish the same goal. Does that make sense? Now, that is something definitely that I think is a great idea. And I mean, in the future, we're very willing to facilitate something like that. Help, like, for example, we'll say Pastor Cody wants to take a team somewhere. I could be like, hey, I've got a great connection here, and I can hand off that connection to you, and you can plan it. You know what I mean? And like, I can help you however you want me to, but it probably won't be something that I'm leading. Does that make sense? Any other questions? We are actually still, when we moved back from China, I don't know if you remember, we lived in China and moved back in 2016. We moved back to Waverly. So we live in Waverly, and I'm usually gone about once a month. And so it's sometimes hard, but at the same time, we knew that for this season, just how the ages of our kids, and like a lot of our older kids are like at the point where they're about to, you know, kind of move out of the house and stuff, that we needed to be based back stateside. I think, to be fair, probably sometime in the next 5 years, we probably will be closer to where our work is, because it'd be a lot easier, you know, like, so we've considered Miami or something like that, because there's so many people from the Caribbean. We've done stuff in New York because there's so many Caribbean people there with, you know, Caribbean churches in New York, and there's been some doors that have opened in Miami, but right now this is the best place just for our family. And my mother-in-law is aging. She's gonna be 83 this year, and kind of we're helping her to make decisions about, she probably doesn't want to live on the acreage any longer, and just those types of things. So it's kind of an interesting balancing act when you feel like God's called you to do something, but then you also, you know, you have obligations to family, and you can't forsake all of that. So yeah, we're still Iowans right now. any other? Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. His question, if you didn't hear, was if someone felt like God had called them to, we'll say, doing mission or mobilization type work, what would you tell them to do to prepare them? I think one of the most important things is to find people that have that same heart and desire, like to start with. Because we've seen it happen so many times where you have like, I mean, I'll just make up a scenario. We'll say you have one or two people in this room that are like, man, I am all about this. And they're friends with everybody else, and they're like, yeah, but, I mean, come on, you know, yeah, but. And if they don't have an outlet or a connection with someone that has that heart or desire, it just all of a sudden kind of dissipates. And pretty soon you're talking to them, and they're 65 years old, and they're saying, man, when I was 20, I felt like God was really pulling on me to do something, but I didn't know what to do with it. So finding like-minded people that God is speaking to in that same way is super important, in my opinion. Anymore, there's books, there's things like anything to do. Just devour that stuff if that's something that you're desiring. Because the first step is not getting on a plane and moving to India. That's like sometimes 5 years down the road of that journey, you know. And so that's one of the things we try to help people. We're like, you know, because sometimes we'll do like a seminar and we'll be like, hey, I feel like I'm going to Afghanistan. And we're like, okay, that's great, but let's slow down. You know, we're not going to just, you're not going to go to Kabul tomorrow. You know, we probably need a lot of preparation, especially if it's Afghanistan. We know somebody that's serving in Afghanistan right now, but in order to get from here where she felt like God was calling her to there, it was 5 years of preparation, of training, of language learning. And so But that was all because she had people around her that were pushing her, and they're saying, you can do this. And it's hard. I mean, we get our email newsletters, and I mean, there's a few bright spots, but most of it's like, you know, this month, 28 out of the 30 days were hard. We had two good days, you know, and we had two people that we were able to start talking to Jesus, you know, talking with about Jesus. And that's a huge win, you know. Not even accepting Jesus, we were able to start talking about Jesus with them. And so that is super important to find like-minded people and to start just putting one foot in front of the other, moving in that direction. And being confident in that, talking to someone who's going to encourage you. I mean, like, we'll say Pastor Cody, we'll say he's like, man, hey, I'm just making up a scenario. We'll say it's a youth kid that's like, man, I feel like God's called me to this. And you're like, okay, man, well, I'm going to help you find some outlets for that. I'm going to help you get plugged in with people that are going to encourage you in that. You don't even have to be the one because you've probably got enough stuff going on, you know, but you can help to say, hey, you know what, there's this online or, you know, hey, if that ever happens, you can contact me and say, hey, Josh, do you know of anybody like in Cedar Rapids that got this kid? And be like, yeah, why don't you talk to so-and-so? I mean, I'm just making up something, but that is, to me, one of the most, I mean, because we're a community as Christians, you know, and I mean, it's no different than if somebody's like, hey, I feel like I'm supposed to plant a church. And if they don't have the encouragement to do it, if they're not in the right circles, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard anyway, but good question, though. That's a really good one. Any other questions? Oh. I would be able to help facilitate and set that up, but honestly, I don't have even the bandwidth to be able to take like mission trips. Like it's great, but it's just not like if I do that, then the other stuff that we're doing, it can't really happen. But I've helped people to get set up with. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah, that's in Haiti. Yep. Yeah, so we work, that's why the key, one of the key parts of what, sorry, I'm like talking behind you guys. One of the key parts of what we do is developing partnerships. That's probably, if I could say there's one most important thing that I do, it's developing partnerships with different organizations. So in this situation, there's one of the biggest organizations that works in Haiti is called Mission of Hope. And Mission of Hope works with many different denominations and organizations. They run two different seminaries, help run two different seminaries. One of them is Assemblies of God and one is Baptist. So they have like many, they have their hands all over the place. And so it's through their networks and their things. Like we're not trying to like recruit all the pastors ourselves because we want to maximize what we're doing. So we work in partnership with whether it's a denomination, great, whether it's, you know, something like Mission of Hope that has like all these connections with many. I mean, there's a lot of, especially in the Caribbean, you have so many independent churches. A lot of them are not affiliated with a denomination. And so, you know, they might have a network or something, but a lot of them are not like, hey, I am a part of this denomination. And so for me anyway, that I love that because I like seeing the greater body. Like I'm not opposed to denominations, but I like seeing, I love being in the same room. Like sometimes when we do a seminar, like we did one of our seminars, we even had a handful of Seventh-day Adventists that came and I'm like, hey, I'm totally for that. I'm not against that at all. And so I like to see that because I believe for me, when it comes to missions, the most important thing is making Jesus's name known and people putting their faith in Jesus. And yeah, there's some different doctrinal things that we can argue about. And I mean, I have my beliefs on them, but I don't think those are as important as actually knowing Jesus. So I love working in those types of settings. That's something that God has really revealed to me over the last few years. So, did that answer your question? Oh, awesome. What date do you leave? Okay, I'll be coming back the 1st. So I leave like the 25th and then I come back the 1st. So like Mission of Hope, for example, like pretty much anybody that does like, okay, I'll use this as an example. So there's two organizations that we have partnerships with in Haiti. One is Mission of Hope and the other one is actually based out of Pella and it's called Many Hands for Haiti. and I'm good friends with Tim Brand, who is their director. They are a smaller organization, and they get, like, for example, any, like, food, you know, like we'll say you get, like, rice and beans, like as, you know, like donation stuff. Almost all of it goes through Mission of Hope. So even if you're like a small ministry on the other side of the country, usually it's going to go through them to get to you, because they're just so huge. Like, I'll give you an example. The training facility that we're using for these pastors was built by Hobby Lobby. They have like an athletic facility that was like, I don't know, like $5 million, and some NFL player donated the money for it. So it's like, they're just so big that I don't always love Giant, but the nice thing about it is they have all these networks and stuff that we don't have to do we don't have to do all that legwork. And, you know, like, for example, out of a group of those 400 pastors, I fully am prepared. So our first seminar we did in Haiti, there was 100 pastors. I would say 20 out of that 100 really got the material that we were talking about, because you have literacy issues, you have just some people have never left their village, so their mind can't grasp what it would be like to even leave their country. But out of that 20, then, there's three guys that we're discipling closer and deeper, because we don't have time to build into 100, but we can build into three, right? And it's so out of that 400, I'm hoping that, I mean, I'm happy if there's 5 out of 400 that are super solid, able to work with, disciple, because that's where, I mean, hey, it's like Jesus, right? You know, when you think of, he chose 12 to really deeply invest in, you know, not thousands, you know, and then that changed the world. So that's our same hope, is this, you know, that similar pattern. So we'll be in two, I'll be this same as last time, I'll be in two locations. I'll be in Port-au-Prince, or just outside of Port-au-Prince, but then up in the, where Many Hands for Haiti is active, is in Pignon, which is like, I think they call it the Central Plateau, is what they call it. So it's kind of like, it's more north, and then quite a ways, it would be, yeah, it's so it's like, it's kind of right in between. There's the two main airports, there's Cap Haitien, and so it's like right, it's like the same distance to either one, as far as traveling. So it's like, you have to, it's a pain, because you have to drive, like, it's like 4 hours by car, you know, and the roads aren't exactly awesome in Haiti. So, anybody else?